Hello and welcome to the Gatewatch Cast. I am your host, Norman Sanzo, and joining me today is Wilson.
Hello.
And as you can see, YouTube viewers, for the iTunes podcast, we have a guest, and our guest today is Rom.
Hi.
So Rom, I'm just going to make it clear to everyone, you are a level 2 judge.
No, I'm not. I am a level 1 judge.
Ah, alright, level 1 judge. So, how did you got there?
Okay, for judging, I've been playing this game ever since Revised, that was in 93.
Mm-hmm.
Alright, and I got involved with the game, not just as a player, but as well as an organizer.
Mm.
So, back in 94, 95, Wizards of the Coast contacted me, and I was assisting with running events as a tournament organizer for Malaysia.
Oh, so basically you are one of the co-founders for Magic in Malaysia then?
Basically, not really co-founder, but yes, we did kind of start it up back in Penang.
Okay, so I'm curious, like back in 93, 95?
Yes, around that time, 94, 95.
So how was the environment back then? Like, how was the scenery? Like, how was it then? Because I always had this in my head where, oh, I wish I was back in time during the start of Magic where I could buy, I buy a box of alphas and then just keep it and won't open it at all. I mean, everybody had this dream.
Yes, everybody has that. Everybody wish they had that time machine, right?
Yeah. But so how about you? Like, how was it for you then? Like, do you have access to alphas or whatnot?
No, okay. The only thing that we had access to was Revised.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we didn't have an option for alpha, beta, as well as unlimited. Okay, we also didn't have access to Arabian Nights or Antiquities.
Mm.
Legends was around, but that was more in KL.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so the sets we had Legends and the Dark. Alright, so for Penang, it's basically I walked into this game shop. Alright, back then there was Game Castle. Okay, which was basically a spawn of the KL, the Damansara shop, was Games Castle. So, I went in there, I saw like, hey, Magic. And then the guy behind the counter was like, what's that? What's this actually? I don't know. They sent down to me, they asked me to sell. So I was like, okay, I did a lot of reading, right? Mm-hmm. So this was one of the hobby game what the game was. So I was like, so I said, I'll buy a pack and then come, we can try. They had 9 boxes left. Mm-hmm. One box he took, he opened himself, and then he didn't know what it was.
Okay.
The rule book was this thick,
yeah.
And very small print.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so. I bought a pack, it was 36 ringgit, I still remember the price.
What?
36 ringgit for one starter.
Oh,
a starter,
okay.
Is basically 60 cards, mix of lands and 3 rares, I believe 12 uncommons.
Mm-hmm. But all of them the same or were they all different?
Of course, all different.
If
it's random.
So it's basically a booster pack with more cards in them.
It's basically, yes, booster pack with more cards.
I think the analogy that you're looking for would be a box of a starter kit, like a starter box.
It's basically
builder's kit. Yes, that's what I'm thinking about.
A builder's kit. But basically it was just one box, 36 ringgit for your 60 cards. Your 60 cards. The lands weren't. I think they gave between 20 to 26 lands. Okay, and you can get. And the thing is, like the booster packs as well. You could get lands in any of the slots. Common. You can get basic lands in the common slot. You can basic lands in your uncommon slot.
No.
Oh.
And you can get a basic land in your rare slot.
Oh, I know where that was going.
All right. Uh-huh. Okay. Which we've seen before.
Mm.
So it actually didn't face us. Actually, we're cursing a lot. If let's say we open a dual land in our main slot, and then we're like, what? What is a land? It's a land. Who wants a land? Then after that, yeah. So back then, the shopkeeper was like. Okay lah, we convince the shopkeeper. Tell you what, we sell you, we'll trade the land for a booster pack. In all due hindsight, we just wanted things to play,
yeah.
You know? Okay,
so,
you must remember this is the time where your most expensive card was a Shivan Dragon.
Yeah.
And a Royal Assassin.
True.
Alright, okay.
I'm guessing back in the day, the concept of mixing colors in your deck was not really there. Yeah.
Back in the day, we got what we got that pack. We take that 60 cards and we play with that 60 cards, which was 5 colors.
Oh.
Yes. The concept of refining down to 2 colors didn't dawn upon us at that point. Mm. In fact, this was also due to the fact that the only guy who had the soul ring, okay, was like, oh, I can tap the soul ring and I can cast any of these spells for anything that is like 2 casting costs.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, colors mana wasn't that shiny. And then also they had other cards, and then mana flash and all that. Okay, people will be playing all this simply because, number one, they get extra mana.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, they want to watch the opponent mana burn.
Oh, yeah.
Mana burn was a thing. So, yes.
Wilson, why don't you take some questions?
Mm. I really don't have that much questions. One of my question is,
yes.
Do you guys regret it after a few years of selling, exchanging the dual lens for packs?
When the dual lens reached about 40 ringgit a piece, we were already regretting. All right. Okay. So son. Okay. Right, okay. Now there is much more regret due to the 4-figure price tag on dual lens that we were just running around playing. Oh, and sleeves didn't exist back then.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Must remember, sleeves did not exist back then.
Oh, yeah. Cards on tables, not sleeves.
If you think about it, right? Like I touched Pokemon in 96, 97, mm-hmm. Like the local juice school. No, not even to school.
Jesco wasn't prevalent, that thing.
What was it again? Like, I forgot.
Most probably Carrefour's or the stores.
I forgot, it was a shop in, I don't know, the concept was green. But anyway, they sold it there. Metro, I think, whatever. There was a twin pack of the starters. So I just bought it. And then, like, I just looked at it and then, like, okay.
Pokemon. Were they legal?
I don't know. They're expensive. They were legal. So, look at it. Okay, I got no idea. So I just put it aside. And then, Yu-Gi-Oh! Or something. I just bought, and then like, back then the front card was foil, so I like the Black Magician. And then like,
were they legal?
Yes.
Okay. Yes. Because you need to remember, Malaysia has so much piracy.
Yeah.
Okay, here's the sad part. It's in Asian English. Yep. So basically virtually worthless here in Malaysia.
Actually, is there even Asian English for those cards now? I mean,
anything new coming in for Yu-Gi-Oh? There's none. Like, they stopped around a certain block. Like, Asian English cards were not really viable because, if I'm not mistaken, the scene back then is all Japan or none, because Japanese cards come in faster, the new boosters and whatnot. But where was I again? So
Yu-Gi-Oh.
No. So you played.
Yes.
Started playing in Penang.
Mm-hmm.
So you mentioned you read books about it. Like, what were you into back then? Like before the magic craze.
Okay. The one magazine which I saw this one was basically Dragon magazine.
Dragon
magazine existed back then because D&D was.
D&D was a very prevalent thing. Yes.
Yes. Okay, so the Magic ad was in a Dragon magazine.
Quite small, right?
No. Dragon magazine is the same size of a proper...
I mean the ad.
The ad? No, it was a full page ad.
Full page? Yeah. Oh yeah, because same company, yes.
No.
Yes, they were not same company back then.
They were not, but the thing is, if I do remember right, Garfield was so insisted on buying D&D because he knew that this has a future, so he did. And I don't know, like, maybe it's the transition time when Watsi took it, who knows, I don't remember, but I do know that they had an interest in it before stuff.
Watsi did have an interest, I mean Maro did have an interest, okay, and all of them, Garfield, Maro, everyone had the interest there, okay, but the thing is that TSR did not sell to Wizards until maybe the 2000s, if I'm right.
Mm-hmm.
In the 2000s. So it actually there were two different entities at the time.
Mm.
Two very different entities.
But now we can see that they're from the same company, but that's just already a history lesson. So let's just talk more about you.
Alright.
So you said you organized some tournaments, right?
Yes.
How many tournaments did you organize before?
I've lost count, but we were the ones that ran the first Malaysian event.
Okay.
Okay, in Penang, that offered a Black Lotus as a prize.
Ooh.
Yes, a Black Lotus went through my hands. But yes, there is, so you can see, you can feel the regret, right? Yes. That goes through me. But so yes.
How much was Black Lotus at the time?
Black Lotus at the time, the one that we got was an unlimited Lotus, and was
94. So 94. it was already around $400-$500.
It was close to $1,000. Yeah. It was close to $1,000. Yeah. Okay. We got it in from Singapore, and that was the first event where we actually, can you imagine back then, it was actually 60 people.
Oh, that's huge.
Yeah, 60 people event. Okay. And there was also this huge contingent from Singapore as well.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So that was actually when I started to get to know, that's how I got my friendship with most of the old players from Singapore.
Okay.
Okay. So you mentioned that WotC contacted you. So how did that happen? Like,
how did they mail?
No, my email wasn't really.
Yeah,
no,
mail.
It was not mail. So it's more like meeting people, all that. The guy, I think you've seen the card that I have around, there's a Tradewind Rider.
Yes.
With email on it, right?
Oh.
Yes.
Oh.
Yes. Oh, it's that, yes, that's it.
But his. I thought email wasn't prevalent.
Huh?
You said email wasn't a thing that day.
It wasn't really a thing, but it did exist.
Oh, so, okay, yes. Okay. I'm sorry, I wasn't born.
Oh my god, yes.
I wasn't born yet. The events you guys are talking about, I wasn't born. I was born in 1998.
All right, okay.
Yeah. Which is why I feel so young
very
now.
All right now, thanks. All right. Thank you for that perspective. Anyway, so, right, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so basically, I assisted because what they were doing was Singapore was running their own part, okay? Mm-hmm. And no one was running Malaysia that was not attached to a shop.
Oh.
So they wanted someone, right, to be more of how should I put it?
LGS?
No, LGS. Mm. Someone independent.
Oh.
Okay, so my weekends were when Magic started to pick up at that point, once Ice Age came in, Alliance and so on, right? And we're not going to talk about Homelands or Fallen Empires, during that time when things started to pick up, I was making trips down every weekend to KL. Mm. Because KL was being very competitive, so KL would be running the events every other week or every week. Mm-hmm. There'll be like one shop run here, so come down, assist them, then go back, then come down, assist, go back, verify, mm-hmm. assist, go back, verify, assist, go back.
So I have a question. Mm-hmm. At any point at that time, mm-hmm. did you ever own a shop? Because from what I see, I think you could be big enough to be a shop.
Yes. Okay. At that point, yes, I was running Ground Zero, Penang.
Mm-hmm. Oh, your shop's name was Ground Zero.
Yes.
Was that your shop, or was it a group of people?
Like it was. It was with partners. Partners there. All right. Okay. Because before that, it used to be Game Castle. Then after that, Game Castle decided that we split away because we decided to dump the GW part, the miniature part, due to Soros screwing up the economy back then.
Ah yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. Because before that, everything was a nice exchange rate of times 2.1 versus Singapore times 1.3 versus the States, it was 2.5.
Oh, those and were the good old days.
Yes.
Oh my god.
Yes, and versus UK, I believe it was 3 plus only. Okay, so those were the exchange rates then Soros happened, and then everything went up to UK went up as high as 8.
Oh, wow.
Okay, so the States also went up quite a bit. So at that point, we just said, okay, never mind, we just do Magic.
Okay, yeah? So was it hard to sell up the shop?
The setup actually the setup back then was quite simple because we basically inherited a previous game shop.
Oh.
So you just needed the tables. Tables, shop already came carpeted, mm-hmm. so you just needed stock. That's it. Showcase, stock, and that's all. Because back then, nothing else was really available. Ultra Pro was just starting up, so then we started to get sleeves. Right? Yeah, yeah. Okay, so, but the sleeves basically was only one option, was Ultra Pro.
Pro, yeah, back in the days.
Even? Yeah, I now remember my story, like, with the whole buying of cards, like, yeah, they didn't come with sleeves, and getting sleeves was hard. And Ultra Pro came in, but Ultra Pro was... back then, if I remember right, in 99, the early 2000s, they were kind of for the Magic size. So for Yu-Gi-Oh players, they didn't really have that much option, except for Konami themselves. They do have some sleeves, but those were terrible. Like after shuffling, they start to peel and stuff.
Yes, actually it was the same case, especially for Ultra Pro, if they were picture sleeves. Oh, yeah. Because picture sleeves had the second layer on it, yes. And as you shuffle it, they'll start to wear out and then they'll peel off. Same issue back then, but yes, those were the days.
Yeah, but now we have what? Ultra Pro, Dragon Shields,
Ultimate Guard,
and what? BCI,
Vision.
I mean, there's so much. It's just pick your favorite and go with it.
Yes. But then, like we all know, Ultra Pro has fallen out of favor for quite some time. Ever since you have better quality.
Yeah, but they're picking back up. They're picking back up with their Eclipse sleeves. So, like I mentioned to Adam before, I would like to try some of the Ultra Pro's
Eclipse.
But the thing is, if there's no demand, he's not taking it in.
The problem is that Ultra Pro's name is already, you know, has already been tarnished with the previous products. So the customer confidence is not there.
Yes.
But it's a catch-22 where customer is not confident with your product, but our product is better now, so why don't you try? Because there's none to try.
Because in the long term, we need to see whether or not it works, because the time is too short for them to be able to be sure that the sleeves can long term.
But
last
Wilson,
long term.
Here's the thing. What you say is true, but the problem is Alex doesn't bring it in to try it out. So you can't build confidence on something that you can't have or haven't tried.
Okay, I have a question for you then. I'll give you an analogy. You see whether or not this analogy is fair. So let's say you go to a restaurant. You go to a restaurant, you try out that chili. Then the next day you get food poisoning. Will you still ever go back to the restaurant?
It depends. Like if I'm crazy enough to go there and try it again,
then you're really crazy.
Because that's the thing. It could be a fluke. It's one of those things where, let's just say I go to a fast food chain. I'm not saying any brand, but any burger joint. Let's just say, I go there, try the burgers. The burgers are not great, and then I don't go. Suddenly, I hear people say, oh, that shop that I went was not good. People love it because their burger was great. Why? There has to be a reason. So in this scenario here with Ultra Pro and their sleeves, people say they're great. And I would like to try some, but there's none for me to try. It's a catch-22 of want to try but cannot try. So there's no confidence in the bill.
It's not really a catch-22 there. It's more or less, it's all dependent on
the demand.
Supply and demand, and also depending on the stock, of the store. If a store is willing to take the chance, all right, okay. If let's say Ultra Pro says, okay, we'll for those shops, okay, we give for this one, for this Eclipse, maybe we'll give you a better deal. Then stores also will be more willing to carry the stock.
So, talking about stores, right, and how dealing with suppliers and whatnot, how was your scenario back in the days, because we've been talking a lot about sleeves all of a sudden.
Alright, okay.
So how did that go along with you?
Alright, for supply back then, it was one distributor. Alright, so WotC already appointed one. They have one distributor, and that was a good old CC lah, Comics Corner. Alright, so back then Comics Corner was WotC was not under Hasbro back then. So Comics Corner, because they're already dealing with comics and all such things, right? So it was easier for them to do the distribution, and basically WotC was quite happy to do the distribution. Okay, so to be honest, there wasn't really much of a stock issue back then. You order something and you would possibly get it, because back then was all basic sets only. So Magic started to pick up. The Nationals were launched. Nationals were launched, and then your Bennings, and then there was a flurry of people trying to qualify for Nationals because you needed there was actually a rankings now back then.
Oh.
It was updated every week. Oh. So every week, yes, it was DCI. The DCI rankings were by country. Then it depends on, and so it's not like last time. It's not like before DCI shut down permanently right now, where the more you play, the more points you get.
True. I remember
back
that.
Back then was actually very brutal. Mm-hmm. You play, you win, you get your points. Ooh. You lose, they deduct points.
Oh.
Your points, yes. So let's say, for example, you're having a bad week, you lose tournaments, right? Okay? So your ranking actually drops.
You get points.
It was basically a leaderboard where you are not, it's not a case of you're rewarded for winning by getting points, correct? But if you lose, you lose points. And then also, it depends. For example, you are ranked 100, you're ranked 1000. If you lose to him, you lose minimal points. If he loses to you,
I lose a lot.
You lose maximum.
Wow.
So basically it's like I think maybe you lose 5 points, okay, in that match, but if he loses, he loses 40.
Ooh. That's a lot.
And then if you win, you win like a significant amount.
Like,
versus, let's say if he beats you,
he gets
maybe a minimal amount.
Yeah.
So
fighting him then.
Back then it was very brutal and such in the ranking. So this also had its controversies, which I will not discuss here.
Oh yeah.
All right, but there was a lot of competition back then.
Yeah, I mean, that's good. Okay. With any game that has a win lose aspect to it, people would want to win, and especially knowing that you can win this much just for playing. People would want to do it.
Yes, correct. Yeah. And your points also would be not just for some, you play pre-releases, as long as you're playing. And back then, games in Penang itself, right, it's very easy on the weekend. You can muster up 16 people, 20 people per shop. Back then we had 2 shops.
Oh.
Both in the same building. The other one was Novel Hub.
Is the shop still open now, or has it?
No. All of them?
All the Magic shops now, the ones now in Penang are under different shops already. But the last shop that I ran, or was mine, was Pegasus U, that already closed down.
Also at Penang?
That was at Penang also.
Alright.
Okay, so back in the days, the only format was,
Type 2.
And then it goes on to after the banning. I heard what they introduced standard.
The way it was back then, gaming. Okay, the formats were quite basic. You had your internal format, which is everything.
Yeah.
All right, with a full restricted list.
Mm-hmm.
All right, ban card. Your ban list back then was very simple. Any NDA cards all banned.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. Any NDA cards were banned. And then games that that basically cause the judge to sit there for like 3 hours, those banned.
Mm-hmm.
Most for example, Shahrazad.
Yeah, I know Shahrazad.
Like, all right,
I'll put a thing here because Shahrazad, if I'm not mistaken, is one of those stupid cards where
mini game.
Yeah.
Yes, mini game.
You take here. Okay, let's go on the table and play another game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you must remember, we actually did play NT back then.
Oh yeah.
NT.
So that's just the Shadow Realm thing.
Yeah. So what else besides that?
Alright, so then when the format started to solidify, when things became solidified, basically it was, they went with Type 2.
Mm.
But this was before Eternal format, so Type 2 was basically back then Ice Age, Revised was still around, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But I think they solidified Type 2 when they had 4th edition.
Oh.
4th edition was when you didn't have duels anymore.
Did you guys get the Chinese set? What was it again?
Portal? Kingdom? Three Kingdoms? Yeah. Yes, we had 3 versions of Portal. The first Portal 1,
for Second Age.
Portal 2, Second Age, and then Portal 3 Kingdoms.
What were the differences, to be honest?
Okay, the main reason why they created Portal was to...
create the Chinese market, right?
No. The whole idea of Portal, actually, 1, 2, and 3, was to... to dumb things down.
Simplify things?
Simplify it for more people to pick up the game. Because there are a lot of things back then, right? For example, interrupts.
Mm.
Interrupts were a thing. Interrupts, when you cast an interrupt, you can only interrupt when you interrupt.
Mm-hmm.
Alright, okay? You cannot like play an instant to start an interrupt. Alright?
So let's say I cast an instant, my opponent casts an interrupt, I can't cast an
interrupt?
Instant.
You can, yes, but you can cast an interrupt to interrupt. So the best way to put it was that was when you have your one person start a spell, and then you see a counter spell. And then you start seeing Pyroblast, Hydroblast, Red Mandel Blast, and all the other interrupts running around.
So back then, mm-hmm. there was instant and interrupt? Or
yes, instant and interrupt. There were two different things.
Ooh.
So what Portal did was, after that, they decided, okay, let's do Portal. There are no instants.
Oh.
All interrupts.
Everything, No.
You said all instants.
Yeah, no, there were no instants.
Yeah, no instants.
No interrupts. Only sorceries. So, everything was played at sorcery speed.
Oh, that does simplify the game, but
yes.
It makes it very dull.
It brings it down to a basic level where I have a creature, I declare attack, I attack you. In a way, they also simplified it for us now, lah. Okay, because back was the case of I simplify, I attack. I attack your creature, then you choose which one to block, okay, and then damage, and then but they simplified the game, but they still had cards that say, even though it's a sorcery, it says that play this. Before you declare blockers, it's still a sorcery.
Yeah.
Okay, but it's still the same thing, all right? Same concept. So they had. So from there, we have a lot of the iterations from Portal, where you had cards that did the same thing that exists as an instant.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but it was sorcery.
Mm.
But it will tell you, oh, you can play this during a combat step. So you're like, okay.
So they try to simplify things, but at the same time too, they don't want to make it too dull. So they inserted cards that do those kind of things. Okay.
Correct. That's the reason why we have our Worldly Tutor from Mirage, and we have our Sylvan Tutor.
Mm.
So basically, what they wanted to do was to just change put all of it into one category instead of splitting the categories.
Yes. So it doesn't confuse people too much.
It even made more. It's more confusing at the time.
At the time, things were. You know what? I'm not gonna talk about that one. Mm-hmm. So, with all the formats going about, when did Commander or Elder Dragon Highlander came into Malaysia?
Elder Dragon Highlander came into Malaysia in the 2000s.
Wow, that was
2000. It's fairly new, but back then due to the you needed a certain access of cards, right? You needed certain cards, old cards and all that. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So actually, EDH was heavily played by judges.
Did you join into?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. So. I remember the story. They say that judges wanted to have fun too, but didn't want to go into hour-long
game.
Yeah.
So they just put in. They made a 100 deck singleton format with one legend, one of the five dragons.
Yes, one of the five elder dragons.
Yeah. And then they played from there, and then they started blah 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 blah. So, were you on that hype train, or were you after the part where we don't really need the Elder Dragons, you can put any legends there?
Yeah, mine was after that when you had other options for as long as it was a legend.
Mm.
Alright, okay, because back then also they also realized this because of a simple case where a legend back then the rule was a legend can only exist one.
Everyone's battlefield.
Yeah, yes. Remember the legend. Yeah. The legend rules back then was, if you have one legend creature, let's just say, Shivan Dragon's not a legend, right?
Shivan Dragon's not.
You can use the most basic. If my Nicol Wallace is out,
okay.
And your opponent's Chromium wants to come out.
And your no. Chromium is fine, but your opponent's Nicol Wallace wants to come out.
it overlaps.
What happens?
Well, the newer son comes in.
No, they both die.
They both die.
Back then, everything dies. No. Back then, was everything died. Then after that, they're like, okay, let's change the thing. So, so it was a case of, okay, the newer one takes precedence.
So the new one stays, old one goes away.
Yeah.
That's basically
makes sense in a narrative storytelling. Yeah. But in gameplay, it's like so annoying.
Yes.
Because I remember the legend rule being in question when the pirate Jace came in.
Oh yeah.
Because pirate Jace comes out, you create a copy of Jace himself. And then like, wait, what? There's two Jaces? How?
So there's two Jaces is one thing, but there's two Jaces on the same side. Yeah. That was a thing. But back then actually my clone can kill everything.
Yeah. Okay, so let's get right into it. So Rom, thank you for the short history lesson. So, your deck, what do you want to introduce to us today?
Alright, okay. This is my mono black deck. It's basically turned to a friendlier version of what it originally was.
Mm.
Okay, right now, my commander is Rankle.
Okay,
he is friendlier comparatively.
Skiller Rex, right?
Rankle, Master of Pranks, is a 2 and 2 black for a 3/3. Legendary creature, Fairy Rogue, has haste and flying, and whenever Rankle, Master of Pranks, deals combat damage to a player, choose any number. Each player discards a card, each player loses one life and draws a card, each player sacrifices a creature. So, yeah, you have the option to pick one or none, but where's the fun in that?
It's not one or none, but it's
three or none.
Three or any.
Yeah, so
actually, you can choose. None. Yes, it's one or none.
So you can pick all three. You can pick two, yep. One, none. So I can see the fun aspect of this one. Like you make people lose life, draw a card. Like I always say, like you need to pay something to get something, right?
Yes. Okay. So basically, this deck, or rather, it's been changed. Mm-hmm. Okay, to become a group hug deck.
Mm.
All right, but with black, if it's a group hug deck, it means that everybody dies at the same time.
Oh, I should know because I play Nekusar.
Yes. Alright, so like I said, Rankle has been toned down. The deck used to be a competitive deck, but what I did was I cut out the tutors. Alright, I cut out the tutors. I changed the commander. The commander used to be Meryn of the Morn Song.
Oh no, not that one.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So Meryn would basically exhausted. Yeah. So the deck would run a turn one Meryn, and then everyone else has a choice of either tutoring something to kill Meryn, or trying to tutor something for themselves. But at that point, if Meryn survives to my turn, I get to tutor, and then it's game over.
Okay.
All right. So the beauty of black is the synergy it has. All right. Mm. Black has a lot of synergy from one card to another. It's not like white. White is not very synergetical.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. Green is all basically creature based, or you just want to pull off your big combo.
Yeah.
But for this deck runs on multiple 2-card clear board combo or win game combo. Simple as that. All right. The most basic or the easiest one is Bloodchief Ascension with Mindcrank.
Basically, Wilson, you want to take one?
Mm, sure.
Mm-hmm.
So what Mindcrank does is, it's a 2-mana artifact that says when an opponent loses life, that player puts that many cards from the top of his or her library into his or her graveyard. And the other card is Bloodchief Ascension. So it's a one black enchantment. It says at the beginning of each upkeep, if an opponent loses 2 or more life this turn, you may put a quest counter on Bloodchief Ascension. And the other is, whenever a card is put into an opponent's graveyard from anywhere, if Bloodchief Ascension has 3 or more quest counters, you may have that player lose 2 life. If you do, you gain 2 life. So it's basically an infinite card combo.
Mm-hmm. It is.
So if it has 3 or more counters on it, you put whenever an opponent loses life, they would need to put 2 cards into their graveyard. That many cards in their graveyard, then Bloodchief Ascension triggers where
they will lose they will lose 2 life for each card.
For each card. Then they will lose an additional 2 life.
Mm. Yeah. So when they lose life, Mindcrank triggers again. And then Mindcrank will mill instead 4 cards. So when 4 cards go to the graveyard, that is total of 8 life that they lose. Which will trigger Mindcrank again, and mills 8 cards. And most of the time it ends not with the whole deck going, but when the opponent runs out of life.
Yes.
Which is very fast.
So it's basically a one turn kill one person combo until you can kill every do it to each of your opponents as well.
Yes, correct. But the thing about this, right? Okay, is if this is out and Rankle's in play, everybody loses one life.
Uh-huh.
Everybody draws a card. Everybody mills a card.
Yeah.
Everybody dies. Everybody dies.
Yeah. To counter Mindcrank and Bloodsheath, it's a very specific combo. No, I'm not counting counter spells because counter spells is too easy. Like the conversation would end. But so what I'm saying is, to counter the combo, you need to have things that prevent non-combat damage and all that kind of stuff. Because like the things that are killing you is kind of Bloodsheath.
That's correct. But Bloodsheath is not a prevention of combat damage, it's actually loss of life. So loss of life kind of gets past damage prevention.
True. But I mean,
The easiest way is to destroy
the Mindcrank. The Bloodsheath ascension. But the Mindcrank is still. But Mindcrank, because the Mindcrank is synergy. If let's say, for example, Sir Conrad is out, Mindcrank will also still happily go on and have a nice day.
Yep. But. So, Bloodsheath Ascension is hard to remove, in my opinion.
Yeah. I mean, because I built a Rakdos deck, and the thing I noticed about Rakdos, or basically the Black-Red synergy, is that there's no enchantment removals.
Yes.
The only thing that you have in red is artifact removals. There's nothing in red or black that removes enchantments.
Until Zendikar Rising, because as they said, Black will gain targeted enchantment removal. However, I believe yes, they will get it, but it will probably require you sacrifice a creature to kill an enchantment, or sacrifice something to kill an enchantment, or pay X amount of life to kill an enchantment.
True.
I would suspect that in the flavor of Black, they'll give it to you, but it's going to cost you.
Yeah. Or it could be at a higher cost, like what, 5 or 6.
I mean, they already have Fatika's Affliction, which is actually pretty decent from Theros.
True.
Yeah, but so Fatika's Affliction is actually quite good.
Theros Beyond Death.
Yeah, Theros Beyond Death. Player has to sacrifice.
Yes, target opponent sacrifices either a creature or
No, no, you chose the mode.
You chose the mode.
So that's very important.
So target opponent sacrifices a creature, or target player sacrifices an enchantment.
Yes.
But it's target player has to sacrifice.
Yes.
So if they have one or
multiple,
more,
in a way, it's good. It's a good way of. It's not really targeted removal, but it's one step there.
True.
Okay, unless of course opponent playing Sigarda, then
never
mind.
So most of your deck runs on 2 to 3 card combos. I see you have the very popular Sanguine Bond Exquisite Blood combo with a bit of Vito thrown in. I think we talked about Vito before, so I won't go over him. But I'll talk about Sanguine Bond. Sanguine Bond is a 3/2 black enchantment with whenever you gain life, target opponent loses that much life. And Exquisite Blood is a 4/4 black enchantment where whenever an opponent loses life, you gain that much life. So the idea is for you to gain life, for opponent to lose life, and whenever an opponent lose life, you gain life.
Yeah.
So it's the loop.
Yes.
And Vito here is just helping the loop.
Yes. Vito is just one other option there. One other part. If let's say you can't get the other
Sanguine.
Sanguine. So you still can run.
Vito Blood.
Yes, Vito Blood. Because the thing about this is not like Mindcrank where you just kill off one opponent at a time.
Yeah, you just kill off all your opponents.
This one you kill off all opponents because you choose who you...
You choose the target.
You choose the target.
So basically, Krankle does the same thing because lose one life, draw a card. So this one,
yes. So it's a trigger point. Even without this, so if Rankle punches someone, it's gonna trigger off already. So.
Yeah, true.
So I see here you have another win con.
Yes.
So you got Fraying Omnipotence and Wound Reflection. So would you explain what it does?
Alright. Fraying Omnipotence is each player loses half their life, then discards half the cards in their hand, then sacrifices half of the creatures they control. Then you run out each time. Okay. So for example, if you have 40 life, you lose 20 life.
Okay.
Alright? Okay, it's half. It's simple. Wound Reflection is an enchantment that it is 5 and 1 black, and at the beginning of each end step, each opponent loses life equal to the life they lost this turn. you lose half again, it's game over. But of course this one you have to wait until end step before you die.
True.
So you can see your death coming, but
you can't prevent it.
You can't stop it.
Well, unless you destroy Wound Reflection.
Or you manage to gain a bit of life.
Basically it says half. Mm-hmm. So basically if you lose half, but you manage to get one, and then you lose half, so you get one less life.
Yes.
Yes.
Which is kind of silly, but there's a card that wins if you have one life.
Is that Tragic Arrogance?
Yes.
Yes. Tragic Arrogance. No, Tragic Arrogance.
It's enchantment.
It's the enchantment. It's the Gideon. It's the Gideon enchantment.
No. Not Gideon.
I forgot. It was from the vault also.
From the vault?
It was very old. Let me check.
Oh my god, stop saying things are very old. It's not that old. It has the picture of Gideon
standing
over
it.
Yes,
that's the one.
Yeah. It's also reprinted in From the Vault Law.
Yeah. Oh yeah, ROE, Rise of the Eldrazi. Yeah,
but yes. The thing is, like, that is a very specific combo to have.
Yes.
True.
So, you mentioned before that black has a lot of synergy with everything that you're doing.
Everything, yes.
So you mentioned that you dumb down the tutors, but are there tutors in the deck? Like, any number of tutors?
For me, I'm using what we call a group hug tutor. Alright, okay. Wishclaw Talisman, which is an artifact. Okay, it is one black, one other. And Wishclaw Talisman comes into the battlefield with three counters on it. Alright, so one mana, tap, remove a counter from Wishclaw Talisman, search your library for a card, and put it in your hand, and then shuffle your library. And opponent gains control of Wishclaw Talisman. So,
and you only can activate it during your turn.
Yes, correct. You can only activate it as a sorcery.
Mm.
Yeah. So this is as friendly as it gets. Because every other tutor is not friendly. Everything from your demonic tutor, infernal tutor, your
Beseech the Queen.
Yes, Beseech the Queen.
Even your
vampiric,
even the
demonic
diabolic tutor.
Diabolic tutors.
No tutor are friendly.
Mm.
This is one of them.
Yeah, true. Yeah.
But still, I see your deck style is basically trying to kill everybody off with kindness.
Yes.
So, why build this deck in this way? Any reason?
Okay, because number one, it doesn't really make you a target.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, from a political point, all right. Rankle is here, and a lot of people actually don't mind Rankle because most of the time it's activated for the each player loses a life and draws a card, and everybody loves to draw cards.
True. I know that.
Yes.
So whenever you play Rankle, you just activate the second ability, right?
Yes. But unless of course there's a very big threat on the table, then everyone feels that it needs to go off, then sacrifices a creature lah. But most of the time, when Rankle sacrifices a creature, he sacrifices himself as well.
True.
Unless you have something on board, like a count token or something like that.
Yes, but this deck the previous version was able to generate a lot of mana. Okay, for that massive as Sanguinate or massive Expel or Torment of Hellfire. But this version is friendly on that. You don't really have that.
Okay. So I remember just now you told us a story about how you gained AD life
yes.
with this deck. So how did you do it?
Ah, yes, okay. Basically, we were playing Kingdom, all right, a variant. So I was a king. So as I was a king, I basically played Sir Conrad down.
Okay.
Alright, Sir Conrad. And then with all the interaction going on between the other players on the table, Sir Conrad just basically allowed me to gain life and then everybody loses life. And then I had Wound Reflection in play.
Oh.
Yes.
So how did you give it life? Lifelink, right? Erebos, Whip of Erebos.
Yes, Whip of Erebos also, so...
Okay, that's a good one. Oh, yeah. I see a very good combo here. Can I read it?
Yeah, sure.
So, the combo revolves around Necropotence and Venser's Journal. So, Venser's Journal is a 5 mana artifact and says you have no maximum hand size. And at the beginning of your upkeep, you gain 1 life for each card in your hand. And Necropotence is a 3 black mana for enchantment. You skip your draw phase, and whenever you discard a card, you exile it from the game. And you may pay 1 life, exile the top card of your library face down, and you put that card into your hand at the beginning of the next end step, right? So what's the combo here?
The combo is quite simple. Alright, Venser's Journal, number 1, gives you
unlimited hand size.
Alright, Necropotence allows you to draw according to your life. In Necropotence in the normal game, alright, is quite limited because you only have 20 life. But in EDH, or rather in Commander, you have 40 life, so you have more resources.
True.
Alright, so with Venser's Journal in play, you can just afford to draw, let's say, I pay 10 life, I get 10 cards in my hand, I'll just sit on my 10 cards. Alright, and then when it comes to my upkeep, I gain 1 life for each card in my hand.
So you gain 10 life?
Yes, whatever plus I have. Yes.
Oh, okay.
Oh, someone's interested.
No, because I'm thinking, because why use Venser's Journal? Because if it's unlimited hand, you still have Recre Tower, Spellbook, or the rest. So, Venser's Journal, like, okay, you at the beginning of your upkeep. Okay, so that answers my question.
Yes.
So basically, you spend 10 life to get 10 life back.
Yes, correct.
Okay.
Okay, so you get 10 life, you gain the 10 life, and let's say if I have one of my other cards out, I gain the 10 life, so I'm going to lose 10 life someone at the table, and so on.
Okay.
Yes, so on. Alright, okay.
So you mentioned that you do not have any tutors anymore, and your main source of card draw is Rankle, right?
Rankle.
Do you have any other sources of card draw?
Yes, I do have, Ghast Grimoire.
Okay.
Alright. So what Ghast Grimoire does is that whenever an opponent discards a card from his or her hand, I may draw a card.
Okay.
Okay. Also, I play Waste Not. Waste Not is an enchantment, one black, one other. And whenever an opponent discards a creature card, I put a 2/2 zombie into play under my control. Whenever an opponent discards a land card, I add 2 black mana to my mana pool.
Okay.
And whenever an opponent discards a non-creature, non-land card, I draw a card.
Okay.
Okay. And to help people discard, Rankle can make people discard. Okay. And I also play Bottomless Pit, which is an enchantment, 2 black, 1 other. During each player's upkeep, that player discards a card at random.
I also
each
see
player.
Each
you
player.
Have Phyrexian
wow.
Arena.
Yes, and I have also Phyrexian Arena, of course. You know, for black, this is a must play.
Yeah. If you have it.
You have it.
Yeah.
So basically, also this one, in terms of card
yes.
draw.
I also have Underworld Connections in terms of card draw. So for card drawing, it is not much of an issue. As long as Rankle's out, there is always the ability to draw cards.
Okay.
Yeah. So basically, you covered everything except for enchantment removals.
Yes.
And okay, I do have to point things out. He does have Obnixilis the Unshackled. So if somebody does want to tutor something, so I'll just read out what does Obnixilis does. Obnixilis is a 4/2 black legendary creature demon, 4/4, has flying and trample. Whenever an opponent searches his or her library, that player sacrifices a creature and loses 10 life.
Yes,
and then the other is whenever another creature dies, put a 1/1 counter on Obelisk Unshackled.
You know, I always forget about that. you're it's only like, oh, you're tutoring, yay, I'm so happy. And then it's like something dies and I'm like, oh, he gets a counter, and it doesn't matter.
Yeah, so basically, what you're trying to do here is, if you have the, what's that called, Witchclaw Talisman,
yes,
and Omnisciris out, you can just give it to a person and they're like, go ahead, search. Oh, I remember that one game when we had one of our previous guests, Farik, on. He was so thirsty for land. And here's the thing, he has fetch lands or what, the Terramorphic Expanse, and also Evolving Wilds.
Evolving Wilds, yes.
Yeah, so he needed lands, but he didn't dare take the 10 life.
Yeah,
because Omnix was just sitting there looking at people. He wasn't even punching anyone. He was just sitting there like, okay.
Yeah, I had to remove that.
Yeah. He was contemplating life, you know. He was contemplating life because he's like, what happened to my spark? Because he used to be a planeswalker.
But he is a planeswalker again.
Right? Yeah.
He got back.
He regained his spark. Mm.
He same story as the fairy. Yeah.
Mm. Battle of Zendikar, right?
Yeah.
Battle of Zendikar.
Yeah. So, I noticed that you mentioned that you toned down the deck, you made it more friendly. Why was that?
Okay, sometimes you must be able to read the table, you must be able to know who you're playing with. Mm-hmm. Alright, okay, because some people don't fancy being killed off, like, you know, in one turn straight away, turn three, and then, you know, you game set match, thank you very much.
True.
Okay, so depending, you have to read, you must know the people you play with, how they react. Some people will be like, oh, that's awesome, we come play again.
And then others will be like, why are you playing like that?
Yeah, why are you playing like that? I didn't do anything. Yet. I managed to cast anything yet.
Yeah.
I only got 3 lines in play. You know, that sort of thing. Yeah. But it happens, I mean, this also kind of flipped the other one night when I did a turn one Dark Ritual, Soul Ring, Rankle, turn one punch, you know, so.
What the fuck?
Yeah.
I mean, it's one of those lucky draws. Like,
yeah,
it's like one of your lucky draws. Awesome turn two win in what? Kingdom? No.
Yeah, Kingdom. Like, turn two Infinite Mind Slaver.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a story for another day.
Yeah.
But the thing is, like, how do I put this? I can understand why people don't want to play with, let's just say, competitive commander decks, because they came here just to relax and have fun, and then suddenly they have to face
a fine-tuned deck.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Let's say Godot, CDH Godot deck. Like, that's not fun, because I seen how EDH Godot works and it's dirty.
To be honest, I actually don't mind playing against EDH Godot, simply because that it allows you to pace. Mm-hmm. It allows you to pay yourself, and it allows you to know how much potential your deck actually can handle such things. Mm-hmm. Godot is not that. You got an answer to kill Godot, that's it. Mm-hmm. And I'm playing black. Alright, okay, I have the answer.
Yeah. Yeah.
Another thing also to note from my deck, the way I've tuned it, is that I cut down also a lot of targeted kill. Targeted creature removal, or targeted player handy and such.
Okay?
Because the idea is that not to make someone feel like, oh, I'm targeting you, and then I'm only targeting you.
Yeah,
because in EDH or in Commander, when you get that one right, they start become defensive and then they start feeling, you know, being attacked. So some people, I mean,
so instead of just pointing the knife at one person, you're just pointing at everyone, that it's fair.
I'm not pointing any knives. I'm just
pointing spoons.
I'm just hugging everybody
to death with your massive strength.
To death. No, not message strength, just to death.
Yes. But I think that goes for another topic discussion.
Mm-hmm.
But before we kind of touch upon that one, is there anything more that you want to talk about your deck?
Okay. Basically, the deck has been tuned. Actually, I go through the deck like every week or after every weekend we play, right? All that. And then you just see, and then you choose how you want to tune it. Sometimes some things you get bored of, or some things you want to. Like for example, I actually did tune up this deck a bit before coming today. I removed the altars. I run two altars, but I actually have removed it already. I removed my Ashnod's altar and my Dementia.
Phyrexian.
Alright, okay. I removed these two. Okay, because that's not the way I want to go anymore. Because back then was a case of create everything, sack everything, and then just exsanguinate the whole table to death.
Okay. Mm, because for me personally, I'm thinking the way I think for my deck build is okay. Let's build it to a point where okay, it's not CDH, but it's fine tuned to work with each other. It has a lot of synergies. It works well, but it's not to a level where, okay, I need to, how do I put this? I need to push it to the point, like, it's there, yeah, I think that, I think the good example for me is, I build it to a point where, if I were to push it, it would be close to CEDH.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Because of the commander that I have, it's not CEDH. I'm running Judith the Scourge Diva. It's not a CDH card, but it is a fun card interaction to play with. Yes.
Well, for this, like I said, I removed the two altars. I actually replaced it with Immortal Sun and Ghast Grimoire. Alright, okay. Immortal Sun is a great way to just power out and then you just, even though I'm playing Planeswalkers, right? But it's a very nice thing to just draw Immortal Sun and then you know no, people aren't going to combo off with Walkers.
Yeah, much.
True. Yeah. Especially with the Teferis running around now.
Oh yeah. Okay, so I think that's it for your deck for this week. Thank you so much, Rom. So, do you mind if we head into the next topic?
Okay,
with
sure.
you, Rom?
Sure.
So, deck build and how we should or shouldn't run the deck. I mean, like I mentioned before, a lot of players in our playgroup usually don't want to face CDH cards, but some in our playgroup do want those kind of interactions. So, what's your view, man?
Okay, my view is actually it's actually up to the individual. On, like I said, reading the thing, reading the game. For example, we have our EDH game night, right? Okay, Commander Knight. So when Commander Knight arrives, you have two types of players. All right, one who wants to play and drag on a table for maybe 1 hour or so, and two. The player who wants to get in as many games as they want as they can, because of this, right? Especially when you have tables where there are players that drag a game, even though the game can be already ended already, right? They just want to drag it because they have control of the board, okay? And their combos are already available, but they don't pull the trigger. And the idea they and I find this maybe somewhat a bit toxic now because. I won't say it really stops here at all, but it just brings out or rather cuts down the fun for other players.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you can pull the trigger, let's go to the next game.
I agree with that. But I think me and a few players, like we had this one game before, and the scenario that we played in was okay, we kind of played to our fullest potential with what we have at the board at that time. And we were talking, we were politicking, we were discussing and stuff. I think what most of the quote-unquote casual players here want is that sense of politics.
Yes.
So I think that's what we or they want because, okay, when we play something, okay, let's just see me. I place Trilling on call after the board got wiped. I'll take all of your things because when a Trillium costs one.
Oh my god.
But the thing is, the creature is whenever a creature comes in, I gain life and so on and whatnot. And whenever a creature dies, I mean, it's one of those scenarios. So, okay, my opponent has big laser guns. It's Aetherflux Reservoir. Yeah. His life is already at 100 plus. So, he noticed that, okay, I have his cards. So, if he doesn't kill me off, or he does something before he can kill me off, I'll gain that much life. So he says, okay, Roman, sorry, but I need my cards back. I say, couldn't we make a deal or something like that? He says,
nah man, I need it. So it's like, okay, do it. So I mean, it's one of those scenarios where I think most of the players here want memorable moments like that, where we can just remember stuff like that. Like, oh, remember the time when we played this and this happens. I think that's what we really want. Like, most of us want, like, to have that political moment, to have that oh wow moment. Yes. And having CDH is not really that if nobody's prepared for it. I think you can have those moments if everybody on the table is up to that same level.
Yes, I do agree with that. Because Commander is definitely an arms race. People play, let's say for example, if everyone's playing the same deck day in, day out, right? Mm-hmm. So every time we meet, I play against you, okay, I see it, then I change a card, okay, to help my next game against you.
Mm.
Alright, then after that, I win. Wilson decides to, okay, he's going to add his deck as well. So the power level slowly starts to go up and keep going up. Alright, I mean, that is healthy, that is the way it should be.
I agree with that, because the way I feel, the way I think is, whenever we play, I would like to improve, because if we keep on playing, we want to see some improvements going on. But if we are static, that means we're not improving. We're just playing a board game, essentially.
Yes.
Even in a board game, you still have to, or you still improve in some sense, like knowing the board, knowing the whatever it is.
There's also another one where people keep saying they're trying to drag you down to their level,
mm-hmm.
which I do not think is good for anyone, because that essentially means you are trying. From my perspective, is you're disrespecting them as well,
mm-hmm.
because you are trying to tell them to play much more a worse game that they can play.
Mm-hmm.
You're they're disrespecting their deck as well. That's from my perspective.
Yes. Because honestly, right, what we want in Commander, or what people want, is interaction.
Mm.
Sometimes they feel there's no such thing as interaction, especially if you are playing against a combo deck that decides to I have all these creatures, I'm banging you, right? But never mind, I don't care, I'm just gonna combo off.
Mm-hmm.
Alright, okay. So for me, to be honest, I'm okay facing against a Gordo, I'm okay against facing off against a combo decks, a Voltron decks, such. Because as long as there's interaction there, it's fine. But I find it to be a bit boring if someone decides to take 7 turns in a row.
Yeah, that's true.
Sorry. True. I already dismantled the deck though.
Yeah, no, it's fine. You do it, you know, you one shot, you gain. I take one turn, it's fine. Mm-hmm. But if every turn takes 5 minutes, then no lah.
My one's just 1 minute per turn, then go 10 turns.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, because I'm not opposed to extra turns, but I dislike extra turns because of the sense of, like, everybody wants to play, and if you're taking more turns than you really need to, that means you're wasting people's time.
Mm-hmm. True.
A good example is, if you're playing Wilson, what's the card from Conspiracy 2? The blue card?
Expropriate.
Is that the one that...
Extra turn one,
extra
right?
Turn, and then extra turn or take... either extra turn or take permanent.
Where they vote, right?
Yeah.
If you're playing Expropriate, that means you're about to win the game. Like, don't drag the game. It's annoying, because taking extra turns is annoying on its own, except if you're the one doing it.
Of course,
But if you're not really achieving a goal, that means you're kind of wasting people's time.
It really depends, because sometimes people want to win, but when they cast Expropriate for gamble, sometimes.
Yeah, but
they want the extra turn to be able to get what they want, but sometimes it doesn't work out. As a guy who actually plays extra turns a lot. It depends on the situation sometimes and their luck.
Yeah, but usually when I notice you playing extra turns, it's usually that you have that answer there. You just need two or three turns just to get it.
I know what I want to do. So, but it really depends on the player. Most people who actually play extra turn spells would know what they want, how they would win, because usually it's in blue, and people know how to win in blue. It's either with a soft lock, or they just win on the spot with a you win the game spell.
True.
Yeah, but it really depends on the person. I would just play extra turns to win. Some people just play the extra turns just to mess with people.
Yeah. That to me is no good.
Yeah, that's a bit. They mess with people. But it's quite interesting. Speaking of Expropriate, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's quite interesting. Remember that game where the Expropriate was casted,
and I said,
take my potence now.
Okay.
And then they took Necropotence.
Oh yeah.
And then I was like, what?
Permanent.
Yeah, but Necropotence, I had so many other options, you know.
I need to draw.
Yeah.
And I had extra turn.
Yeah, but
I could draw so many cards, get all my combo pieces.
Yeah.
True. And that's what happened.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I got my combo piece, I won.
Mm-hmm. True.
Yeah. Some other guy gave me an extra turn, so I had two extra turns. I still remember that game.
Mm-hmm.
I feel awkward talking about it.
I remember. Like I do.
Yeah, it's been a long time since I played now.
Yeah, but so
time to wreck you guys.
But Rom, you mentioned that with this deck specifically that you tone it down just because of the playgroup, right?
I tone it down playgroup, and also there's it allows more interaction. More interaction. It's not like, you know, it's not like when you sit down, you see the deck, and then you get a hopeless dread. It's like, oh shit, I'm gonna lose. I don't have a chance of playing. No.
So your philosophy. So would you say that your philosophy of playing Commander is, I want to play a game where there's heavy interaction between players.
I play for fun. To be honest, you just want to play for fun. Winning, losing is
secondary.
You've seen the decks I played, right? Okay, mm-hmm. I sat around with a Ren and Stimpy,
mm-hmm.
and with like what 10 cats and dogs looking at the whole table, because those are political moves. It's not like, you know, because as soon as my 10 dogs go, right, the whole table will punch me already.
Yeah.
So sometimes you need to be political.
I think that I agree with that, because for me, whenever I play, I want to have that heavy interaction between players. At least everybody's doing something,
yes.
Like either politicking or countering or just dropping a big creature in and then swinging for lethal. I mean, the Aetherflux Reservoir and aiming down at me, that was fun. Like even though I lost, I still had fun because of the game. It was not too long, but it was a very fun interaction between my deck and my opponent. That's how I feel, I don't know.
Yes, that's basically how I feel as well. It's not about winning, it's about the fun you have.
Yeah, I mean, winning is something,
yeah.
Like we all want to win,
yeah.
That's a given. But I think what the interaction is more important, because if you're having fun, even though if you lose, that means, okay, it's a success. Everybody had a great time. Everybody wants to do this again. Win, lose, that's besides the point.
Okay, I have to interrupt here because there's this thing I wanted to say. Fun is subjective to everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes people think winning is fun. So sometimes if they do not win, they do not have fun. So I'm not saying that it's wrong or what you're saying is wrong. I'm just pointing it out that fun is really subjective, and what is fun depends on the person who plays EDH.
So basically you're devil's advocating right now, because
yes,
winning is fun. I mean,
winning is, of course, will be fun. Losing is not that fun as well.
Technically,
but
losing is fun also if you're losing on your own terms.
Yes, if you lose on your own terms, yes. But if your opponent is killing you, but after extra turning and putting a Skitterex to kill you, in fact, of course, people won't find that fun. Yeah, but it really depends on how the game is played and how well your deck performs and all that.
Yeah.
A lot of important factors factor into it, but I do not think it's fair to say everybody's concept of fun is the same.
True, true. I do remember this point, like, this was back in my Yu-Gi-Oh days, when I met with another shop owner. He commented on my deck. The deck was a Chainburn deck.
Ah, Chainburn.
And he commented and he asked, why are you playing this deck? This deck is not good. And I say I was just playing it for fun, because it's something out of the norm. You could say it's anti-meta. And then he said, oh, if you're not winning, you're not having fun. To me, that's a toxic mindset to a point. Like, okay, so if I win, I have fun. And I like telling this story because it's very funny. We started playing, turn one me, put on a face down card. His turn, he pulled out a blue eyes shining dragon, something like that. It's one of those power cards. When it hits a face down card, it does piercing damage, but it does double. So he hit my thing for 7,000 damage. And when it flips up, oh,
it's marshmallow.
That's marshmallow. But here's a caveat. It has hexproof. His creature has hexproof. So I activated one of my cards, making him take all the brunt of the damage.
So he took 7,000.
He took 7,000, and because of the marshmallow, he took another 1,000. He lose the game. We played again. It happened twice, and he's cooked. So to me, I was having fun.
Meaning the opponent was not having fun.
I don't know him, because he's playing his tier 1 deck, I'm just playing my cheap deck. So it all depends on the scenario, the timing. Fun is, like you said, Wilson, fun is subjective. To me, winning is not all. To me, it's experience.
Okay, yeah. From what I take from the story, you won, right? With the janky combo. I'm happy you won. You got the janky combo to get out, but you were happy that you won with the janky combo, am I right?
Yeah, I mean, it's to prove a point to him that winning's not everything.
You won against him though.
Yeah, true. But the thing is,
you were happy after you won, right?
Yeah.
So basically, what you're doing is proving his theory right.
We're looking at this perspective, because we're looking at it as what, winning and winning and winning.
Yeah.
The whole idea is that
to have fun playing your own deck, I guess.
That no. And also, most importantly, to not be a sore loser.
Yeah.
That is the point there. You can be because if let's say you lose, so you expect you see the lose happens. It happens.
True.
Yeah. I mean it happens. But you take it with a grain of salt or pinch of salt or
take it with grace.
Yeah, you take it with grace, you learn from that. You're like, okay, this is the first mistake, maybe I shouldn't tap out for this, maybe I should have done something else on this, maybe I should have been ready, make sure I expected.
Unless you the opponent is insulting you in-game.
Then different story. I mean, if you see your whole table, a Skitterix sitting in a commander zone, and you're going to tap out, then you expect a Skitterix to bite you, poison you, and then spit out your body in a corner after that. I mean, fine. What do you expect? You expect someone to save you, is it?
True.
Someone might save you by the good grace. But then after that, if you're going to just go around and punch the other guy who saved you, then
I mean, that's the thing. I mean, the whole idea is winning or losing, you take it with a grain of salt and
take it with grace.
Yeah, and then like play it with dignity.
It's about playing dignity, knowing your deck, knowing how interaction works.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And not being the idiot who has a plowshare in hand Alright, has a blusher at hand and decides to tap out. And then expecting the rest of the board to have an answer when Godot decides to come out. Oh, I have my hell on my horse, ha ha ha.
Who was it?
And then you are sitting there with a plusher in your hand and then you're like,
oh, that was you.
No, it wasn't me. It wasn't me, but
who was it?
I'll tell you that one. But basically that's it. I was like, I have the answer, but I tapped out. And then, oh no, I lost. I feel bad, I lost.
You can't do that.
Yeah, you can't understand. You take this one, you understand, learn your mistake, yeah. Don't do it again. Yeah, then out all the time. Because this is EDH, this is Commander. The possibilities are endless. This is not a basic case of playing RDW 60 card deck.
Oh yeah.
Because that's all your answers, that's all they get, and then if you screw up, you're trying to win, you're going 1-1, it's fine. But when you're sitting at a whole table,
Expect the worst.
Always be prepared. Always know your deck. Most importantly, is knowing your deck.
Yeah, and the thing is, I feel that when you play Commander, especially in a public space, you expect to lose. Expect to lose and learn from it.
Yeah.
Like, every time when I play, I take it as a learning experience and see, okay, what's wrong with my deck? What hooked me up here? Like, what's the problem with this? And then, from that point on, I see, okay, I have problem with enchantments. Is there any answer for enchantments? Unfortunately for Rakdos, no. Unless you're playing stuff that exiles target permanents or Nevdisk.
Exactly. Yeah, Nevdisk. That's your only answer. Black's only answer to everything.
Into the void. No, actually, there's others, but
Perilous Vault.
Yeah, Perilous Vault. I mean, there is ways, but the thing is, you have to learn from it.
A lot.
You have to learn from it. Look for it. Look for. Ask people. Like, what? The other day, I asked you a question about Hearthstone, not the card game, the card.
Yeah.
And when I read Hearthstone, it says that the abilities of creatures...
Activated abilities of creatures cost one less to cast.
Yeah.
Yes.
And it doesn't say you.
Yeah.
And then like, Rom, does this work for everyone? And the answer was yes. And then like, that's dangerous.
Yeah, it's like playing Helm of Awakening as well.
Hmm. So, it's one of those things where I learned something that day. I mean, win, lose, draw, you need to kind of learn from your mistakes and learn from the game.
Okay, to add on to this, right, okay, for me, I also have certain goals when I sit down for a game.
Mm-hmm.
Alright, maybe my goal is, okay, today I'm going to, I intend on winning. Mm-hmm. All that, fine, that's your usual common goal. For me, it's like, oh, I'm playing Kalamne. Alright, my giant red white giant deck.
Yes.
Okay, my goal today is to just punch someone, okay, in one shot and kill him. Okay. And then after that, if let's say the whole table decides to jump on me, after that it's fine because I achieve my goal. Yes.
Don't scream at people when they target you because you're the threat.
Yes, exactly. It's like, and then it's like, and which I did I punched someone for like 97 commander damage shot in one turn. So it's like, thank you That's it. So yeah.
But yeah, I do agree with that. I do agree with that. Like, that's also learning the game. If you see the threat, go for the threat. Not like, oh, if you see that person is comboing off while you're the one with the 97 commander damage on stack. Like, get rid of him, not deep combo person that's going off. Well, certain combos, like if the person...
Okay.
I mean, if the person is comboing off, like for a infinite, whatever it is,
And everyone decides to punch the guy who just did 97 commander damage.
I mean, it does make sense. It does make sense. Like you were the threat.
Yeah.
That reminds me of my previous game where everybody was going off really strong. I was there with nothing. I was playing the what's this snake from. Khans.
CDC.
Undead Vizier. I was doing a lot of shenanigans with it, like tutoring stuff, and people were looking at me because I had nothing on board. Then, when everything was right, I played off my cards and I infinite recur and death and recur.
It was the combo of Bontus Monument, one of the vampire, I forgot, from Ixalan.
Ozon Vampire.
Oh, yeah, Ozon Vampire. Mm. The pirate. And I mean, it's a full set of combos where die, reborn, die, reborn, gain life, lose life, gain life, lose life. I mean, it's one of those things where that was my goal, to win with that kind of combo.
A jank combo.
Yep.
Yeah.
But still, it was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
So, Wilson, anything more to add?
No, not really.
Bro?
97 commander damage. Yes.
I would like to finish it. I don't need to counter that. Wait, bro. If that 97 commander damage goes back to you, do you lose the game?
No.
Yes.
Of course. Yeah. Of it's course. More than his life.
It's 97.
It, commander damage can't be dealt to you. So.
See, that's what happens. That's what happens when you have two. What is it? Gisela, is it? Two Gisellas on the table. Mm.
Oh, man.
Oh. And, if, and, it, and
I wasn't there, though.
If no, you wasn't there. You weren't there.
If I were to take control of your commander.
Yes.
And punch me. To you,
no.
Yes. Would you die?
No. If it's normal damage,
like no, it's his commander. It's his commander.
Let's say it's a 2 power and you hit him, no.
No, so even though if I can struck you for 21 commander damage, you won't die?
You have to you have to own the commander.
Really?
Yes, that's the ruling for commander.
So what, if I would take his commander, swing it to another person, that person gets commander damage, right?
No.
No?
No.
Huh. That's fascinating. I will refer to you wrong because you're the judge.
Yeah, you're the judge. Why is he asking me?
Yeah, because you play more commander than me.
That's true.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
But with that, let's end the show. So,
okay, I just checked the rules. They say yes.
So
704.5 U. In a commander game, a player that's been dealt 21 or more combat damage by the same commander over the course of the game loses the game.
Yes.
So it doesn't just say anyone's commander.
No, the idea is that because, for example, I cast Insurrection, I take all your commanders, okay, and then I use, for example, let's say you've already been punched by his commander, and then I take his commander and punch you with it, you still die. Mm. You still die if it's 21 commander damage.
Yes.
So basically, if I were to, wow, that's mean. Like,
if you insurrection all our commanders and punches with our own commanders, yes, we die.
Yeah, and that's mean. Like, killed off by your own creatures.
Killed off by your own boss.
That's even more mean. But anywho, if you guys have any questions, concerns, or suggestions for the show, you can contact us at thegatewodcast@gmail.com. Also, please subscribe and rate us on iTunes, YouTube. Don't forget to press the bell icon to stay up to date. Links will be in the show notes.
Oh, by the way, we have didn't talk about today's combo of the day.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, well, let's just add that in and then we just...
I think we already had a few two-piece combos of the day. Like, yeah,
true.
We have a lot. But, Rom, which one do you want to highlight out of all of your combos that you have?
For me?
Yeah.
For me, it's always the Mindcrank Blood Chief Ascension combo.
Yeah.
I mean, this is... For these two, it's a basic pull-off. But... For this, you can get it as early as turn 1, the Dark Ritual, you can drop both on the table. Of course, everybody will try to punch you in the face, but yeah.
Yeah, true.
Yeah. Or even better, turn 1, Dark Ritual, Soul Ring, bring out
Mindcrank and this.
Mindcrank, and then bring out this, and still got one more black one.
Yep.
What are you going to do with it?
Blood. I don't know. This.
You can actually have one more black one.
Because you turn one, let's say you turn one land into Soul Ring, and into Dark Ritual, then you use one mana to get the Soul Ring, you have three mana left.
Yes.
Yeah, you still have three mana because the Soul Ring gives you back two.
Yes.
You use a two for Mindcrank,
yes.
Then you use the one for Blood Chief.
Well, you could put a Lotus Petal inside just to get that free one mana.
Am I right? I'm right. Oh no, wait. You actually get one more because
this
yes.
That's what I said, you actually do have one additional mana.
The one.
Yes.
Mana burn.
There's no mana burn anymore. Not anymore.
Well, I'm not that old, so...
Oh boy, yeah.
Oh, you heard of the mana burn. Do you know what the beauty of the old times was?
What?
Okay. Combat damage on the stack.
Oh yeah, I heard all that.
What? How?
Combat damage goes onto the stack. before I commented
the most recent basically was Mock Fanatics and such. Mm-hmm. Okay, Mock Fanatic, the most basic was Mock Fanatic. My Mock Fanatic attacks, you block with 1-1 stack damage, okay. Mm-hmm. Combat damage on a stack, I sacrifice a Mock Fanatic, I deal 1 damage to something else. So the creature that block dies, then the Mock Fanatic still decides to grenade someone.
Wait, what? So if I'm not mistaken, okay, from what you're telling me is that combat damage, assign combat, assign blockers, and then assign damage, and then before damage goes through or after damage goes through?
Before damage goes through, you can still play fast effects and the damage will still be there.
Okay. So what he means is this: if you attack and you block, before damage goes on the stack, you can maybe something like your creature has a sack effect to deal a damage to the opponent's creature. You sack it, deal the opponent creature, but and...
Okay, the best way to put this, okay? Uh-huh. My 10-10, swing at you, okay? I swing at you. I deal damage on stack.
Mm-hmm.
Alright, okay? I fling.
20 damage.
Can? Really?
Used to be.
That's a example. That's a simpler example.
That's a most
but that's simpler. That's example. Technically confusing because of how damage goes through.
This was This was before 6th.
It was 2010, right?
No, way before that. Yeah, yeah. It's only until it was until 6th. After that, only then they changed the way damage was done.
Oh wait, the mana burn was 2010.
Now they decided to streamline things because that was too complicated, was it?
Mm. Yes. Some people wouldn't, but at that point, because I blinked out for a while when I came back, and then they were like, "No, it doesn't work that way." Liar.
Alright, so I think that's all, right?
Yeah. Okay. So anyway, we here the podcast is recorded at Alexandria Bookstore, and said bookstore is at 7-02 Jalan Kolam Air 1 Lonche Heights, 8800 Johor Bahru, and links to the shop and Shopee page will be in the show notes too. I hope you guys do have the time to visit because, like I mentioned before, over here there's a lot of players, we have a lot of fun, be it competitive or casual. Our goal is just to have fun. But anyway, I have been Norman Sanzo.
I'm Wilson.
And our guest here is Rom. Thank you so much, Rom, for coming in. And we'll guys catch
thank you for having me.
No problem. And we'll guys catch you next week with another fun episode of the Game Watch Cast.
See ya.